Welcome to 1 hour of the toughest, roughest wrestling you'll ever see.
That's right, Dick the Bruiser, set it off.
The big question, have you got the endurance? Have you got the brains to get past the excellence of execution?
Where are all the gutless American wrestlers? Step in the ring with the Baron and face the brave.
The reason why Axe and myself were put on this earth is to demolish people.
Bobby Heenan, that is a very good-looking sport coat you've got on.
Yeah, and I paid for mine. Mine isn't government issue.
Yellow, everybody. Lance Russell and Dave Brown right along ringside. By golly, we're ready to go with another big week of championship wrestling.
Greetings and welcome to Wrestling Nostalgia. I am your host, Dave Dynasty. Thank you for joining me. Today, I got a great guest. I have Wildcat Wendell Cooley on today. He's going to talk all about his career coming up here in a little bit. Before we get to that, make sure you check out the recent bonus episode I released discussing the AWA during May 1988. I'm going to have more of these bonus episodes in the future discussing the AWA and other topics that I'd like to dive deeper into. These are fun little sidebars on things that I'd really like to just pursue that maybe don't warrant a full-time podcast of their own, so I'm going to release them just as bonus episodes here of Wrestling Nostalgia. And while you're out there checking stuff out, Epic Toys sent me some gifts recently, so check out the YouTube channel as I unbox their Demolition 2-Pack and Sabu Uncensored figures. You can go and check out Epic Toys on Instagram and X at Epic Toys UK. Be sure you subscribe to the podcast, follow on social media. The podcast is available on all podcast platforms. Please make sure you rate, review, subscribe, share, do all those fun things. The best way to follow me is on X, formerly known as Twitter, at The Dave Dynasty. And like I mentioned earlier, please subscribe to my YouTube channel at youtube.com/TheDaveDynasty. The best way to financially support the show is to go to prowrestlingtees.com/TheDaveDynasty. And buy a shirt. Also, while you're out there supporting things, go check out the Ultimate Classic Wrestling channel at classicwrestling.net, or you can download their app on Roku, Amazon Fire TV, Apple TV, iOS Mobile, and Android Mobile. There's lots of great stuff on there for you to watch. And also support Wrestling Nostalgia as part of the WrestleCopia family of shows. You can check out all the other amazing podcasts with great hosts that shine a light on wrestling history. Go to WrestleCopia.com or look up the shows on any podcast platform. Woo! Now that all that's taken care of, we've checked all the boxes, did all the plugs, paid all the bills, etc., etc. Let's take a break, and when I come back, I'll have that interview with Wildcat Wendell Cooley. This is Listen to Their Screams, a horror podcast that feels like you're chatting with friends. Hello, I am one of your friends, Dave. I am one of the co-hosts of Listen to Their Screams with my friend, Ike. And we want you to come and check us out. We are a fun-filled, positive horror movie podcast that does reviews, news, birthdays, anniversaries. We play games. We are a ton of fun every week for you, the horror fan out there. For all of our links to our social media and the podcast platforms, just check out our link tree. It is linktr.ee/listen2screams. That is listen, the number 2, and screams. Or look us up on your favorite social media platform and podcast provider. Welcome back to Wrestling Nostalgia. This time I'm being joined by Wendell Cooley. Wendell, how are you?
I'm good, dude. How about you?
I'm pretty good, pretty good. So tell us about how you started training for wrestling. There's not a lot of information out there about your training and your start.
Well, there's not even a lot of information out there where I'm even from. If you tell anybody Milton, Florida, and they go, where is that? Well, it's up in the panhandle. I know everybody out there knows the Fullers, the Welches, and so on and so forth. Well, they all pretty much had all of the southeastern area from Tennessee, Kentucky, Mississippi, Florida, Georgia, you know, wherever. But back in early 80s, my older brother, Greg, was working at a building material supply place and met a retired individual who, by the name of Bad Boy Hines, you'll have to go back to the, I guess, 50s, 60s, and 70s when he was in his prime. Anyway, he retired here. He was an insurance salesman. And my brother got to be friends with him and talk with him and whatever. And of course, we were childhood wrestling fanatics. And he asked him, would he be interested in training him? And Bad Boy agreed. So my brother and my cousin gathered up a bunch of material and stuff and built a fixed ring, not one that was portable, not one that was forgiving. built one in my cousin's backyard, and they began their training sessions. Well, it wasn't long after that I got the fever, wanted to become part of it. And we really got in it hot and heavy. It was probably at least 6 days a week. We would work out, then we would get in the ring and do what we knew how to do and what Bad Boy would show us. But of course, his style was from way back in the 50s and 60s, which was a lot different than what was going on in the 80s at the time. So we brought in another individual who was more current with his style of training. And then we had a couple other people who actually came and worked out with us at the time. And I know everybody knows Bill Ash. Bill Ash was... His father had, you know, the boot company. He made everybody's boots. You know what I mean? And Bill was one of the boys. So he was here in the territory at the time. He came out a couple times and gave his perception of what we were doing and what we needed to do and blah, blah, blah. Norman Frederick Charles, which was one of the original Kangaroos. He retired here. He came by a couple times and worked out with us and gave us his opinions. And finally, my brother got his first shot on Dothan TV, which Channel 4, you know, we did it back in the studio at the time. Ron Fuller owned the territory at the time. So he got an opportunity to go and make his debut. And it was probably maybe a month later I got mine, and hell, hit the rest is history.
Well, so I know early on in your career, I know at some point you started working as Rick Casey, Scott Casey's cousin. When was that in your early career? When did that come about?
Okay. All right. Well, I had worked for Ron probably 4 or 5 months, and he told my trainer, he said, look, we can't keep using him around here and beating him up, because we think we can probably make a little money with him down the road, but he needs to go get some experience, you know? So Chris Love, I don't know if you remember that name.
He
was in manager Memphis a little while, and then Southwest with the Blanchards. He was trying to get a little thing started up in Iowa, where he's from, around the Dakotas and Iowa and Nebraska area. So he called and asked me if I'd be interested in coming up. And of course, me being a greenhorn and just wanting to be in the ring, I did. And, you know, I worked hard, man. I had a good body. I had a good mindset. I just needed time in the ring and time on the mic, you know.
Yeah, you don't hear about wrestling in that Iowa area very much.
No, no. And
not really a hotbed
anyway,
there.
He had a, yeah, well, he had a money man, so he flew me up. And I was up there probably a couple months, and he brought in Scott Casey.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Well, I was a big fan of Scott's, mm-hmm. watching Southwest on cable, yep. on USA Network back in the day. He brought Scott up, and I just didn't think Wendell Cooley was a good, you know, good wrestling name. Why, I don't know, but so I wanted something different. So I asked Scott, would it be a problem if I used the name Casey, and, you know, thinking if I was Scott Casey's cousin, maybe I could, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
You know how that is.
Sure. Get a little
rub. Yeah. So I did. Scott agreed, and it was good. So after a couple matches that he watched me work, he pulled me to the side, and he said, look, he said, when I go back to Texas, he said, I'll talk to Jonathan Boyd, who was doing the books there at the time, and I'll give you a plug and see if, you know, if there's any way he might be able to use you. Well, sure enough, he did, and that was in November of 84. I got the phone call from Jonathan Boyd. I was working as a plumber, and he asked me if I'd be interested. I said, hell yeah, when you want me there? So he said, well, we do our TVs on Monday night. I don't remember what day of the week it was. So I told my wife at the time, I said, well, I got a job and I'm going to do it. But if I don't make this chance here, I'll never know. So I quit my job, took off, went to Texas, and they gave me a big push. Eric Embry was helping Jonathan Boyd at the time with the books. And he and Danny, what's Danny's last name? They were teamed up as the Blondes. And anyway, got a good push there. And Scott and I became really good friends. I still stay in touch with him. You know, he's had some bad health problems over the last 2 or 3 months.
Yeah.
I think a stroke and some other issues, but he's well.
Yeah, I've talked to Scott a couple of times. He's when I interview him, and he said when he gets, you know, if he gets a feeling better, he'll come on. But yeah. After going through kind of Southwest, then you ended up in Mid-South. This is where you, to me at least, you really started getting kind of a lot of attention. This is where I really started hearing of Wendell Cooley. And man, I always liked you had a team there with Al Perez, and man,
yeah,
and got a tag title run there. And I always liked your team. I always thought it was a good mesh, and you guys looked good together and worked good together.
Well, it was, and it did. You know, I left Blanchard. Their territory was, and I didn't know and didn't care at the time. I wasn't smart enough to know, but it was on the decline pretty hard.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a lot of long freaking trips out there.
Yeah.
For a little bit of money, but it was more money than I was making working 40 hours a week. That's for sure. And I was, you know, doing something I loved to be doing.
Yeah.
So anyway, my buddy Norman Charles called Bill Dundee, who was doing the book.
Mm-hmm.
For Watts at the uh-huh. time, and they gave me an opportunity to come in, and I did. My very first night there, I worked with Dutch Mantel, and anyway, it was probably a month or so. They seen my abilities, and then Al Perez was there. Of course, he had been in the business a couple of years. I was still in my first year, really.
Mm-hmm.
Because I broke in 83, but it wasn't nothing but a shot here and a shot there, you know?
Yeah.
But I started full time in 84, November of 84. So anyway, we get the opportunity, and Jake Roberts was there. He took a liking to me and my abilities. DiBiase, same. And Dundee. So they decided to put Al and I together, and it was a good thing, and I enjoyed it. It was a long freaking territory, man. Jesus Christ.
Yeah.
You're gone for 5 days a week almost and just on the road hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of miles. But the reason I left there, it was stupid, but it pissed me off at the time. We were working at the Metroplex in Baton Rouge. Mm-hmm. For whatever reason, they teamed me and Duggan up against Kamala and Ray Candy, who was doing the Zambui Express deal.
Yeah.
And, you know, Akbar was their manager, and Akbar loved me too. He's the one that gave me the Wildcat name.
Oh, yeah.
I was just Wendell Cooley prior to that.
Yeah.
And he came up with the Wildcat part. So, anyway, we were working in a Metroplex. And, of course, they were trying to get Duggan over, you know. Uh-huh. They had a deal going with Duggan and Kamala. And anyway, you know, I was doing the blade job. And I cut myself real bad accidentally between my middle and my ring finger on my right hand. Really bad. And when I got back to the dressing room, I went to Grizzly Smith, who was the agent. And so what do I need to do? He said, go to the hospital, get that thing sewed up. And he said, charge it to Mid-South Sports. Send Bill the bill. Well, I did. And the very next paycheck, he took the damn money out of my paycheck.
Oh, man.
I said, hang on a damn minute. Now, I got hurt working for you. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Helping your guy over, and you're going to charge me for that? Nah, bullshit. I walked out. I left. And we were in Shreveport at TV. You know, we did TV on Tuesday nights there at the Boys Club, and that's when we got paid. And I seen that he had taken it out of my check, pissed me off. I told Al right then, I said, dude, I'm gone. You're on your own. I said, bullshit with this.
Yeah, it almost made you quit the business, right? I mean, you thought about not just giving it up.
Well, it did. Well, Bill Dundee had already got the word somehow, because by the time I got back to Baton Rouge, he had already called my house. And my wife told me when I got there, she said, Bill Dundee called, wanted you to call him. So I did. And he said, I got a spot for you. I understand you left and whatever, you know, whatever's happened, happened. But I said, Bill, I said, nah, bullshit on this. I said, I'm going to go home and go get me a damn regular job again. I said, shit on this. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and this is back in Memphis, though, right? Bill Dundee was back in Memphis at this time.
Yes, Dundee had left and went back to Memphis. Right. And I think, I want to say Slater and Murdoch were sharing the book for Watts at that time.
Yeah.
And I didn't get along with Murdoch anyway, but.
Yeah.
I told Bill, I said, tell you what, give me a few days. Let me get moved back. We had to leave, you know, pack up, move back to Florida from Baton Rouge. And I did. And I got my wife settled in, and I called Bill, and he said, look, I got a good spot for you. He said, I got a good crew coming in. He said, I think things are going to do good. You're going to make some good money. I'm going to work a program with you in Dutch and blah, blah, blah. And this was around Thanksgiving time of 85. Yeah. I said, okay, I'll come and give it a try, but I'm not going to play this bullshit and, you know, like just happened, you know. Yeah. You take care of me, I'll come in. But other than that, no. I got you, mate. So I went in and we had a good run and made more money there than I did working for Watts. And Watts's money was double what I was getting from Blanchard, of course. But we had a good run there. I mean, Tommy and Bobby were there, you know.
The
I don't feel
Fantastics?
blank now. Yeah, the Fantastics. Dutch and I was there. Buddy Landale was there. Dundee was there. And I think a couple other guys. Of course, you know, Tojo was a regular there. Billy Travis, who's gone now.
Yeah.
He was there at the time. Pat Rose was there. I think Jeff Jarrett was just trying to break in as a referee at the time. He was still going to school. And we had a good little run, really did. Of course, Lawler was there bringing his,
guys in. I've heard you tell the story about when you went to Memphis, though. This is where you you really kind of learned about the advantage of merchandising and selling pictures and things like that.
Oh, my God. Dude, that was unreal. My very first week there, I'm in the dressing room, and this older guy walks up. I'd never met him. Hands me an envelope. All right? And it's a big thick, and I can tell it's thick. He said, "This is yours." It had Cooley on it. I said, "Okay, well, what's this for?" He says, "Your merchandise." I said, "Merchandise?" He said, "Yeah." I said, "Okay, well, where did that come from?" He said, "Well, I handle it all. I take 10%, you get the rest." Damn, I don't remember how much was in there, but a bell went off. So along with that, you know, that's cash money, you know what I mean? Of course, we got paid in a check, but that was cash money, money on my hip, you know, my little hush money stuff. So anyway, when I decided that it was time to leave Memphis after the program with Dutch was over, there wasn't much left there for me, you know, and I had gotten a phone call from the Fullers. They had a spot open for me. Of course, that's what I wanted to do, is come back home and be home and
Continental.
Do this.
Yeah, close to home. Yeah.
Yes. Yes, that was in March of 86. I came in. And Adrian was here, who he was working with Norvell Austin at the time, and that program wasn't really igniting a lot. Austin Idol had just left, I guess, had a falling out or something. He had left.
No, you can't. You can't tell me Austin Idol had a falling out with someone.
So they were in search of something to get hot. I don't think that I was brought in with that intentions of being the top guy. Okay. According to Adrian. He told me that I was just actually really brought in just to get him over because of the gimmick that I had, and then, of course, his gimmick. But something happened, you know, and it clicked, and I got hot, and, you know, the rest is history. But the gimmick deal, I was the first person here to bring gimmicks out. I mean, nobody was doing it. They had a little weekly program they would print and pass it around and sell for a dollar, but none of the guys did the gimmicks.
Yeah.
I didn't get into all of the shirts and all that stuff because you end up having so many of those things to carry around and whatever. I could carry everything I needed in a briefcase. And it was unreal, dude. I mean, freaking unreal. How those guys never thought of that, take advantage of it. Now, the heels were pissed. You know what I mean? A couple of them tried. You know what I mean? But
Yeah, at that time, people are not buying heel merchandise. They're not going to buy a heel picture.
Very few. There was a couple like Tony Anthony, you know, the white boy with his girl with him. They sold a few gimmicks. But it was freaking unreal, man. I can't believe the guys didn't figure that out and jump on it.
Yeah. Yeah, well, you had that run there in Continental, and you end up going to WCW. You had a pretty good run going in WCW, and then you got hurt. Tell us about what happened there with that run in WCW and that injury.
Well, of course, you know, I had left Continental at that time. That was around 80, well, 90, 89, 90-ish. Eddie Gilbert came in and took the book.
Oh, yeah.
And Eddie and I, for whatever reason, had acquired heat, okay? It was never a specific incident or anything like that, but we acquired heat. And when he came in to take the book, David Woods had just bought the territory from Ron Fuller. They brought Eddie in to take the book. And I said, you know, I think it's time for me to make a hiatus. So I call Ron, and Ron said, well, I'm not supposed to take any of David's talent. I said, you're not. I don't work for David anymore. You know, I'm done. I turned in my notice. I'm finished. I'm out of here. He said, well, hell yeah, I got a spot for you. So I went to work for Ron in USA for 4, 5, 6 months. And things weren't as, you know, we had hoped. So it was taking a decline. So I came back home. I was living in Montgomery at the time. And Ronnie West called me out of the blue. He said, I got a spot, or they got a spot, whatever. I don't know how much influence he had, but he said, he got a spot here with Turner if you want it. Now, everybody was there at the time. Luger, the Steiners, Sting, everybody,
yeah,
you know, was there at the time. So I said, well, hell yeah, I'll take it. He said, okay, well, let me get back with you and get everything. So next phone call I got, was pick tickets up at the airport. I think I was flying into Pennsylvania or somewhere. I don't know, Pittsburgh. Somewhere, anyway, making that whole loop up there. And Sullivan was one of the agents. And we make the loop around, and then we get back to TV. And they put me in a tag match with some kid. I think he was doing an Indian gimmick or something. We were working with the State Patrol.
Yeah.
We were working with the State Patrol.
Something, Charlie Iron Knife or something weird. Like, I remember that guy. Yeah.
Yes. And we were working with Dale Beasy and his partner. They mm-hmm. were doing the State Patrol deal.
Yep.
And I was in the ring at the time. I think they were trying to get a little heat or something, and he tagged in his partner. When he came in over the top rope, you know, he jumped in over the top, lost his balance, and clipped the side of my right leg. My knee hit me right in the knee. And it went 90 degree, like the old Joe Theismann break.
Yeah.
But right in the knee, right in the joint. And instantly I don't remember if it was Pee-wee or who the referee was. I said, let's go and get this over with now. I'm hurt bad. So we did. They carried me out of the ring and got me to the hospital. And I don't remember if it was the Hawks or the Falcons orthopedic team doctor
mm-hmm.
came in. And he told me, he said, we need to go in and based on the x-rays and whatever, we got to go in, open that up and see what we got to do to fix it. I said, you don't understand, doc. I don't have insurance, number one. Number two, if I don't work, I don't get paid. What are my options? He said, well, you really don't have many. Well, what are my chances of being okay? He said, very slim. So I tell you what you do. If you can fit me with one of them metal braces to keep my legs still, I got to try it. He said, I don't advise it. I said, well, I got to. You know what I mean? I had my opportunity, you know, to finally get in to some national exposure. So I did. And like I say, Kevin Sullivan was the agent. And he told me, he said, if you can just get to the ring, I'll take care of you. I said, no, I know you will, brother. I said, but this, he said, no, I know it's bad. Just get to the ring. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
I'll take care of you. You can keep your job. I would wrap that thing so freaking tight before I went to the ring. And thank God I had slip-on boots. You know, I wore the cowboy boots.
Yeah.
So I could do it just in a couple minutes before I went to the ring. And by the time I got back, man, that thing would be so purple and so swollen. And I did that for a whole week. We made it back around to TV in Atlanta. Ole was booking. And they were doing a big deal with Sting and Luger. And I don't remember the whole gist of it, but they wanted me to get involved. So he called me into the big meeting and he said, I need you to do this, this, and this. Something off the top out into the whatever, some bullshit. I said, I can't do it. He said, what do you mean? I said, my knee. He said, well, what's wrong with your knee? I said, you don't know. He said, no, kid, what's wrong? And I told him, he said, well, go home and get well and then call me. So that was kind of the extent, you know what I mean? I said, I'll do anything you want. I worked all week. I just can't do that off the top, that hot shit. I think it was something out into the freaking first row at ringside or something. I don't know. But it was something I knew damn well I couldn't do on one leg, for sure.
Yeah, really.
So, yeah, that was kind of the extent of the WCW run, but.
So you end up going to Puerto Rico with Frankie Lancaster. So what happened with your knee there? Did it just, you just let it heal up for a little bit, or what became of that before you went to Puerto Rico?
Well, that was, like I say, around 90. It was probably 3 or 4 months before I could really do anything and bend it or. And I just kept working and kept moving, kept working, kept moving with it. And I worked a couple independent shows here and there. And then, of course, Frankie and I had been buddies since 84. We met working for Blanchard.
Mm-hmm.
And then I got him a job with Watts. And then I got him a job in Memphis. Then I got him a job with the Fullers. And anyway, he had been to Puerto Rico once before and he wanted to go back because there wasn't nothing left except McMahon or WCW was pretty much wound up by then. So it was working for Vince or over there or nothing. He still was, you know, looking for that breakout,
right,
you know, moment.
Yeah.
So he asked me if I wanted to go, and this was not long after the Brody incident.
Yeah, right.
So I said, well, okay, I'll tell you what. If you can get us a guarantee, I'll go. He said, all right, well, let me call Carlos, and I'll call you back. So he did. He said he'll give us a grand a week. Okay, we'll try. I had never been a heel before. Of course. So that was kind of neat, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So we went in and we had a good run going, had a good thing going. It just, I don't know. The lifestyle was not my cup of tea. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Yeah.
And then of course, Dick Murdoch came in and took the book. Murdoch and I didn't get along. What really pissed me off was Frankie and I were, we had a local there, a young kid who'd done a lot of pictures and stuff and sent them into magazines and things. I can't remember his name. We just knew him by Richie.
Mm-hmm.
So he would take us 2 or 3 days a week. Well, we were making a trip and Richie was driving. He had a little Nissan. He was driving. I was in the front passenger. Frankie was sitting behind me in the back seat. And we're strolling along up the highway. We coming into a four-way intersection and a car turns right in front of us. And we broadsided them at about 50, maybe 60 mile an hour. I don't remember. But Frankie hit the back of my seat and pushed me through the windshield and cut me up pretty bad. I'm surprised it didn't break my neck, but cut me up pretty bad. So we're standing there at the intersection there, and people gathered around, and I'm bleeding profusely, you know, from three or four places on my body, waiting on an ambulance. Finally, the ambulance gets there and get me taken care of, take me to the hospital, and I go in and get sewed up, and we find a ride from the hospital to the building where we were supposed to be. And when I get there, Murdoch says, "You guys are up. Hurry up and get dressed." I said, "I'm not getting dressed, partner. I can guarantee you that." He said, "What are you talking about?" I said, "I'm not getting in there with these open wounds. You know, I probably had 30 or 40 stitches between my head and my arm and all." I said, "I'm not doing it. I don't get in there with this dirty crap and get staff and take a chance of busting this open and whatever." So anyway, he got a little attitude and we had some words. So the next day I told Frankie, I said, "You know what? I'm going to go on back home, bro." I said, "You can handle this on your own. You don't need me here, you know?" Mm-hmm. So that was kind of my extent of my Puerto Rico stuff.
Yeah. At some point, you and Frankie had a tryout match with the WWE against the Bushwhackers or the Sheepherders.
We did.
When was that? And how did that come up, and what became of that?
That was prior to us going to Puerto Rico.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah, we worked with the Bushwhackers. I think it was Nashville. Kurt Hennig got us the shot. And matter of fact, the very first night we were there, Gorilla Monsoon was in the dressing room, and I walk in and introduce myself to him as Wendell Cooley. He said, as Heartbreaker Apollo is what it was. We were going to work as the Heartbreakers, Apollo. Uh-huh. Uh-huh. He said, "Not tonight, you're not." I thought, okay. All right. So I'll be Wendell Cooley tonight. You know, won't wear my get up. So we got through with that. And I told Frankie then, I said, "This ain't the place for me, buddy." I said, "I have no doubt that we could get a job, but they're going to totally bring you down, totally rebrand you, hold you until they think that they're ready or find the perfect opportunity for you to do something. And I'm not up for it." You know what I mean? I done paid my dues, you know. I've done been on the top in three different territories. I know how to get people over. I know how to the whole deal with drawing money is. So I told Frankie, "I'm not interested. If you want to keep on going, buddy, have at it, but I'm done."
So, yeah.
That was kind of it. That's just the way they did things. You know what I mean?
Yep, absolutely.
I didn't work too hard to be Wildcat Wendell Cooley, number one. And then, you know, doing the Heartbreaker gimmick with Frankie would have been okay. I prefer to be a single because honestly, I'm a lazy bastard in the ring. I don't like to do a lot of thinking. I just like to do a lot of reacting. And when you're a baby face and you got a good heel, all you got to do is listen and react.
Right.
But when you're a heel, you got to do all the thinking. You got to do all the thinking for everybody, you know?
Uh-huh.
And that just wasn't me.
I don't know if I've ever heard anybody give that reason for wanting to be a baby face. So they don't have to call the match.
Well, yeah, I mean, you just got to react. You know what I mean?
Absolutely. Yeah, it makes sense.
When you're working with enhancement talent, a lot of those guys you have to, because they don't know.
Yeah, right.
But anytime I ever got in the ring with a guy, whether he was a enhancement guy, jobber, whatever you want to classify him as, or if he was a veteran or whatever, if he was a heel, I would ask him, "Are you comfortable taking over? If not, I will. But I would prefer if you can. So I would even give those job guys the opportunity to call a match and get stuff, because I was never one for eating somebody's lunch, because it didn't do you any good. It didn't benefit you at all. You know what I mean?
Yep.
That was never my style. My style was sell, make the comeback, you know, and get over in the end.
Yeah, right.
And obviously that's what worked for me.
Yeah, know? Absolutely. Yeah, I remember early, you know, especially in the early parts of your career, going around you, I mean, you were all over the magazines. And they always saying, man, that Wendell Cooley was going to be the next, you know, the next big thing, the next breakout star. And it just sounds like when you talk about your career here, man, it just, whether it be a, you know, a change in the promotion where you're at, kind of sidetracking you a little there, or, you know, a mistimed injury, just always seemed like, man, just luck was never on your side. You had a lot of ill-timed things that happened that caused a lot of changes in your career.
I heard a podcast by Cornette here a while back.
Yep.
And he summed it up best. I came along at the wrong time.
Yeah.
You know, all the territories were shutting down. Everything was going national between Turner and Vince. And, you know, they were taking all of the veteran people, you know, over the new guys. Now, like I said, there was no problem and no doubt in my mind I couldn't have earned my spot if I had not have gotten hurt with Turner. You know what I mean? There was no doubt in my mind at all. Just only because of my work ethic. I did have a decent knowledge of the business. I understood the business. I knew how to make money. I wasn't a prima donna, you know, baby face. So, and I could work with pretty much anybody's style. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Adapt to it. But that kind of, injuries. And then, you know, I had a bad attitude there a couple times, got pissed off, you know, and left, and maybe should have rethought it, but I didn't. Because my thinking is this, and Ron Fuller pulled me off to the side one time and told me after I had been here for a little while and things were hot, things were booming, he pulled me into a dressing room in Birmingham where we did TV. He said, I need to talk to you a minute. Actually, I thought I was fixing to get my notice. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So we get into dressing room there, just he and I. And he said, how's things going? I said, okay, I guess, boss. Why? What's the problem? Oh, there ain't a problem. He said, I just want to let you know. He said, I just want you happy and I want to take care of you. He said, you're my money man. Okay. Well, now that you mention it, you know, I think I might have got shorted on a couple payoffs. He said, well, I'll make sure that gets squared away. He said, if it don't, let me know and I'll put you on a guarantee. I said, okay. Well, I appreciate that, boss. And thank you for noticing. But my kind of thing is, it's like that. There's a reason I said that. If a person knows, a promoter or a booker knows, you know what I mean, what you're doing and you're capable of and you're putting asses in the seat, you shouldn't have to go ask for anything. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I was always like that, like working for Watts. You know, Watts, when he took that money out of my check for getting hurt, you know what I mean? That was like a slap in my face. No, bullshit.
Yep.
You know what I mean? And then, anyway.
Yeah, well, it's, I mean, you know, sometimes people, I think people they misconstrue an attitude problem, or you know, having a bad attitude, for just someone who's, you know, stands their ground, is not willing to compromise, and you know, stands up for themselves.
Right.
And yeah. So,
and that was me. Yeah, I didn't have a bad attitude towards the guys at all, man. I only had a couple issues in the dressing room with a couple individuals in all the time. Mm-hmm. You know, I was not a shithead in the dressing room. I didn't have any heat with anybody. I did have a issue with Sid Vicious. Mm-hmm. when Robert and Ron brought him in to Continental, he was green as freaking hell. Lawler had brought him in and used him for probably 6 weeks there to get himself over. And, you know, and then Sid thought that, shit, I'm top star and, you know, I'm going to come in and do this. He was doing the Lord Humongous gimmick.
Yeah.
And they were going to put him with me. And he had a problem one night. And I called him out, set him straight, and we never had no more issues. And there was one other brief little deal with Buzz Sawyer.
Yeah.
When we were working for Bill Watts, I had to call him out because he did something I asked him specifically not to do. I had broken my neck working for Blanchard. Mm-hmm. And Buzz loved to do that belly-to-back suplex deal. And we were going over finish. He says, is there anything that you like to do or don't want to do? I said, yes, please. Whatever you do, I'll do anything else you want to do, but do not, please, do that belly-to-back. I'm afraid if I go too far back, hurt my neck again. Oh, brother, no problem, brother, no problem. Well, guess what? Right during the heat of the whole freaking deal, he does the belly to back and pissed me. I didn't get hurt, but it pissed me off. So I ran him down in the freaking dressing room. Murdoch was there because Murdoch was his partner. Murdoch hauled ass. And, dude, I went off on him and it didn't come to blows, but he knew where I stood. And over all the years, that's the only two real issues that I have or had, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. You mentioned Sid doing the Lord Humongous thing there in Southie. Did you ever work with Jeff Van Camp when he did the Lord Humongous down there?
No.
Or did you miss that time?
Jeff had just left here or was leaving when I broke in. He went to work for Bill Watts.
Right. Yeah.
Now I did work with Jeff a couple of times over the last few years, but never when he was here working for Fuller's. No.
Yeah. Jeff, I mean, obviously Jeff broke in there in Indianapolis with Bruiser. I mean, he just has Jeff Van Camp. That's right. I remember seeing him those, you know, early years, but I didn't know. Yeah. I didn't know if you ever crossed paths there with him in Southeast or not. So.
Oh yeah. I had met him a couple times and I seen him when he was working for Watts, when I first went to work for Watts, and then he left there shortly after, got out of the business and become a law enforcement officer here in Escambia County and retired.
Yep. Good guy. Yeah. Good guy. Yeah. Yes.
Very good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. When you, what do you, do you watch any of the current product at all? What do you think of wrestling now? Or do you just not pay a lot of attention?
I don't. If I watch anything at all, man, I'll get on YouTube or something and look at some of the old stuff. But
yeah,
I mean, I guess you got to adapt to the times with this new stuff that they have, but there's nothing out there that interests me at all to watch.
Yeah.
I mean, there's some good guys there. Don't get me wrong. Some good gimmicks, good talent, but the product itself, I don't know. In my opinion, it's too expose. Even though the people know it's a freaking sports entertainment, you know, it's just some of the shit is just too over the top for me.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, even if they know, you still got to try. I mean, it's still, you know.
You do. You always want that slight little bit of doubt, you know?
Yep.
But it's just some of the stuff is just over the top for me. And there's some good talent out there. I mean, really, Yep. Guys work hard, man, and they, you know, they got good physiques. They put their time in the gym and they do whatever, but some of the stuff that they come up with, it just, in my opinion, probably don't mean shit to nobody but me, but it's just over the top for me. If I was a mark buying a ticket, you know, I probably wouldn't.
Yeah, I agree. So do you get out there? Do you do any appearances, conventions, or anything? You ever get out there and meet the fans and do any of that kind of stuff?
We were doing a reunion show every year up until last year. The guy that was doing it came down with kidney failure. He's on the list to get a kidney replaced if he can get a transplant, but he's very bad health. Nobody wanted to step in and take it over. We were doing it in Dothan. We had done it 5 or 6 years. And I did get a couple contacts. And matter of fact, I did one in February, one in March, a show, a working show. I have two prices. If you want me to just be there, it's this. If you want me to get in the ring, it's this.
Yeah.
And I'm straight up front. If you can't afford my price, tell me now. It don't hurt my feelings. It doesn't disrespect me. If you can't afford me, then fine. But I'm not going out there because I want to be a weekend hero or anything. I've been through all that. You know what I mean?
Yep.
But I do. I have done several podcasts over the last year.
Mm-hmm.
And I would welcome any more. I would take more opportunities to work. But, you know, if you got the money, I'll be there. You know what I mean? It's
absolutely
now, because of my age and things, I can't afford to, you know.
Yep, sure.
I don't heal as quick as I used to.
That's right. Yeah. So,
but gotta I can still go.
Got to be worth your time.
Go. I mean, physical condition.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I would take some more bookings if anybody's out there listening to, you know, your podcast.
There you go.
But I want to throw a plug out there for my own little thing.
Sure. What do you got?
If you will write this down.
Okay.
This is something I got started about a year ago. A good friend of mine came down with colon cancer. He is a big fanatic on singing, karaoke. He has been doing it on his own, you know, doing a little weekend thing. He'd do a little live thing on Facebook. So he invited me over. And I went, and I used to have a band. I don't know if you knew that.
Really?
When I got out of the wrestling business, I hooked up with some local high school people that I graduated with, and we formed a band. We were called Nothing Special. We played all genres of music, because we were very diverse in our, you know, likes and whatever. But I was the front man for them. We were together about 4 years. And I ended up having to let that go because I took a job with the government. And it was hard to play 4 and 5 nights a week and then hold a full-time job, because I needed the you know, I needed the retirement and I needed the benefits and whatever. Right, but anyway, long story short, back to the karaoke. My buddy asked me if I'd come over and do some karaoke with him. I said, well, sure, I'll do it. So I did. And it was good therapy for him. Mm. You know what I mean? To keep his mind off things, going chemo and whatever.
Sure. Yeah.
And it just become a habit. So I want you to write this down, if you will.
Okay.
It's Kim, K-I-M.
Okay.
The letter N.
Okay.
And William, W-I-L-L-I-A-M, Land, L-A-N-D. It's their Facebook page. We do it every Friday night at 6:30 Central. We have live karaoke, and we have a couple of people that are pretty awesome, can really get going. And of course, we have other people that may show up that's not that great, but it's not what that's about. You know what I mean?
Right. Yeah. So every Friday, 6:30 Central, live on Facebook, if they follow that page, they,
if they follow that page, they can catch us live. Yes. And I sing every Friday. Now, this Friday, I will be here. I was expecting to say I wouldn't be, but we're doing it Fridays now. We did it on Saturdays forever. I'm in a golf tournament this weekend, so I won't be there Saturday or Sunday. But, yeah, 6:30 tomorrow night.
All right. Time. Got it. I will so put it. Well, I will
if
put
there's
that.
Any wrestling fans out there that wonder what I'm doing, where
there
I'm
you
at,
go.
You know, they can catch me live every Friday night.
It's a chance to see Wildcat sing. And what's your –
yeah.
Do you have a favorite karaoke song? Is there a Wildcat, Wendell Cooley, go-to karaoke song that you could just nail? Do you have one?
Yes, there. Well, actually, there's two of them, and it's
okay.
It's the Kentucky Headhunters' "Walk Softly."
Yep. Yep. Okay.
Yeah, and old George Jones, original, "The Window Up Above."
Yep. Okay. Yeah. There you go.
Yeah.
Can't go wrong with George Jones.
But I do some old Alabama stuff. Some and I hit that one pretty well.
Yeah. All right. Well, there you go.
Of course, I do some older stuff. I don't do a lot of the new modern stuff. Now we have another guy that, because I don't want to step on anybody's toes. You know what I mean?
Sure.
Each one of us has our own style.
Yeah, there you go.
So I don't want to step on them and take any of their stuff, but I let them handle the newer stuff that's out right now. I'm kind of more in the older Merle Haggard, George Jones, Kentucky Headhunters, you know, Confederate Railroad, the older stuff like that, Alan Jackson. Stuff like that.
Yeah. There you go. I'll put that in a link to that page in the show notes, and I'll share that on social media when this comes out. And hopefully everybody can go and check you out there on Facebook Live doing that. So we'll make sure that information gets out there.
Gene Jackson here, inviting you to join us for the Retro Wrestling Review Podcast, where each week I'm joined by guest co-host to review and discuss old school pro wrestling. Right now, we're doing week-by-week reviews of USWA Memphis from 1993. We have an audio version of the podcast as well as a video version if you want to check out the clips of the show we're talking about. It's a lot of fun, so for this and a lot of other great wrestling content, check out WrestleCopia.com. That's WrestleCopia.com.
All right, and special thanks to Wendell Cooley for coming on and chatting with me. What a great interview. Hopefully we can revisit. I said that all the time, right? But I hope so. A lot of these guests, I plan to revisit and have them return in the future and talk a little more in depth about specific parts of their careers as opposed to just a general overview. Like I mentioned earlier, let me remind you, follow me on X at the Dave Dynasty. Go check out the WrestleCopia network of podcasts and all of that. There's lots of good shows out there. Next episode, next week, I will have Ed Helinski on, who worked for the WWE as magazine editor and in marketing and merchandise during the 80s boom. This interview was fascinating, right? It was a great talk about a side of the sport that we don't often get to hear about, right? Pretty cool. Ed has lots of great stories about being involved in that, working for WWE, time spent with wrestlers, interactions with wrestlers, and so on and so forth. It's really a great conversation that I look forward to you guys hearing. Thank you for your support. Thank you for all you do. And listening to the show, make sure you tell a friend and help spread the word. But until next episode, wherever you go and whatever you do, be good, be safe, and always keep on growing.
Fans, we brought you All-Star Championship Wrestling. This is Sam Menninger thanking you for being with us and saying until next time, so long, everyone.